a Birdificer creation.
Welcome to episode 149 of the Let's Talk Apple podcast. I'm your host, Bart Bouchotz, and this is the show for January 2026. Somewhat unusually for a January, we actually have quite a bit of news to talk about. So, without much more faffing about, let's get stuck in. As usual, we'll start with a few follow-ups, just two, to be honest, of stories we've covered before. We talked in December about India demanding that Apple and indeed all the other major smartphone vendors force install a government app on all phones in the country. And Apple and Google and Xiaomi and pretty much everyone pushed back and the government went, no, never mind. They appear to have another great idea. They would now like the source code, please, to all of the mobile operating systems. Reporting, again, is that everyone is pushing back. Whether or not they succeed will remain to be seen. Something we talked a lot about this time last year, really was just kicking off this time last year, is Apple and Google's failure to obey the law with regards to TikTok in the United States. It became law on the 20th of January, around about the 20th of January last year. I don't remember the exact date. It might have been a week before the inauguration of the second Trump term, but it was mid-January a year ago. It became illegal for US app stores and for US infrastructure companies to host TikTok as long as they remained mainly owned by China. And in a completely not illegal, I won't call it illegal, it's simply just not something that is in any way allowed by the rule of law way, the new president of the United States told the companies, just put them back, or in the case of Akamai and Oracle, just keep hosting them, because I promise I won't prosecute you. Now, that has no legal weight. That is a decision, that is a statement, which is worth as much as the paper it was never actually written down on, because it was tweeted, well, not tweeted, ironically truthed by the president. And the companies just did it anyway. They just broke the law. Now, the law specifies really quite substantial financial penalties, and the statute of limitations is 5 years. So those companies took on 12 months worth of risk. Well, the counter of the risk they have exposed themselves to has ceased. TikTok has been divested, the US operations of TikTok have been divested from the Chinese parent company into a new US entity. So Apple, Google, Akamai, Oracle are now complying with the law for the first time in a year. It's mind-boggling that the US law means so little. But we live in interesting times. Moving on, surprisingly briefly, to a regulatory rundown here. Again, just really India is where the dramatic stuff happened. In this case, we're not dealing with governments looking for access to smartphones. We're dealing with the Competition Commission of India and their long-running attempt to enforce their 2024 anti-competitive finding against the App Store and Apple. Apple have tried just about every trick you could conceive of to stall the commission from actually releasing the report and then actually implementing any sort of a fine. Basically, at every step of the way, Apple have sought out and found unique and interesting ways to hold the commission back. And the commission, it turns out, are getting a little bit cranky about that. We found out in January that actually there had been some developments in December. They just weren't public filings, so we only found out about it when they were reported by Reuters in January. So we learn that Apple filed suit against the CCI again for calculating the fine based on Apple's global turnover, which is just like the GDPR and just like the Digital Services Act and just like the Digital Markets Act in the European Union, a very normal thing to do. You basically make the size of the fine related to the size of the company as a whole, so that large companies, basically the idea is that every company has the same level of risk if they choose to flout the law, because you don't want it to be the case that if you're rich enough, the law's not for you. That's the problem to be solved. So quite normal, but Apple decided to try use that as a reason to hold up the judgment against them. So they filed suit, and the CCI also filed suit rebutting that claim, pointing out the obvious, like I just said. Later in January, then, the CCI issued a final warning to Apple, saying it was fed up of waiting for Apple's formal reply to their allegation or their findings, and that they would go ahead without Apple's reply if the company missed another deadline. So one of the other things Apple was doing was just not giving their formal answer and trying to drag things out that way. And the CCI basically said, yeah, the company has a right to reply, but do you know something? Eventually that right evaporates when the company choose not to make use of that right. And they're basically saying, we're at the end now. Apple responded by running off to the Delhi High Court, requesting a block on that, or specifically, actually, a block on the CCI's request for the data they need to calculate the fine based on global turnover. That is all still ongoing. Expect developments in early February. Meanwhile, in the European Union, surprisingly little actually happened in terms of the European Commission's fight with Apple. But there was an interesting adjacent development. One of the things the European Commission was very keen to try and encourage with the Digital Markets Act was third-party app stores. The Commission feels very strongly that a single app store is anti-competitive by its nature, and therefore they have attempted to force more app stores in very convoluted and very European ways with a lot of bureaucracy and a lot of complexity and a lot of confusion. And it hasn't worked great, as evidenced by the fact that one of the first third-party app stores to have a go has folded. That is the MacPaw one. And, well, everyone's blaming each other. The Commissioner blaming Apple, Apple are blaming the Commission. I think there is plenty of blame to go around on this one. I think it is clear from what is going on in other places like Japan most recently that if your aim is to achieve the single goal of getting more app stores, you can do so with way simpler mechanisms than what the Europeans are trying. And clearly the extreme complexity of the Digital Markets Act is not succeeding in creating a genuine marketplace for marketplaces. Moving on then to legal latest, let's start in the United States. In New Jersey, Apple got themselves into a little bit of trouble, and given the size of Apple's wallet, I think this does count as a little bit of trouble, a $150,000 fine for breaking a decades-old agreement with the New Jersey state, where basically in New Jersey, the law requires very clear pricing in physical stores. So if you walk into a store which has items on display, there are rules that basically say how clear the signage has to be on those products you're displaying so that people have a good idea of what a thing you're showing off actually costs. And a decade ago, Apple got in trouble for breaking that law, and they entered into a so-called consent agreement where they agreed that they would obey the law. And, well, they've just been caught not doing it again, which is embarrassing and silly. It seems like the kind of thing that just shouldn't happen, and that Apple should be big enough to comply with such a simple law. Just put some clear labelling on your display stands. Like, can't be that hard. Anyway, an embarrassing fine for Apple, one assumes they will sort it out. Still in the United States, but on the other coast, a California court has narrowed the scope of an ongoing case against Apple about how its own apps collect user data. Basically, the case was quite broad, and a judge has dismissed the most dramatic claims in the suit. So You could say that the case is 75% evaporated and just a rump of the case remains. And that rump is going to be litigated. So there will be more news about that in California. But it's a pretty big setback for the plaintiffs here that the majority of their case has been thrown out before it's got as far as arguments. Another US case that's been going on for some time is AliveCor versus Apple, which is about heart rate monitoring. And the US Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit has upheld the lower court ruling that dismissed the antitrust case against Apple. That draws a line under that. So Apple can analyze heart rates on the iPhone, and that is not anti-competitive. We talked last month about the bizarre case of XAI suing Apple and OpenAI because, well, poor Elon's thing isn't at the top of the App Store, so there must be something wrong somewhere, somehow, because Grok is obviously the best. Put a pin in that for later. And if it isn't at the top of the list, then there's something broken, clearly, because Elon's ego couldn't stand anything less than that. Anyway, the whole case is silly in my... no, not even my humble opinion. I'm sorry. It's just silly. Anyway, they were using it as a very interesting way to use discovery to try get, frankly, trade secrets. It was arguably darn clever. Maybe silly in the sense of that's a ridiculous thing to allege. But whoever was writing the actual legal briefs tried to use it as an opportunity to get a lot of very valuable corporate intelligence on the competitors. So arguably both silly and extremely smart all at once. Either way, that attempt hasn't gone particularly well. First off, there was a request sent to South Korea to force disclosure from a bunch of companies in South Korea. And that has just been thrown away. The South Korean court basically went, what now? This case is silly. And threw it out. And then meanwhile, a judge has also, in the United States, I should say, a judge has also blocked efforts to obtain OpenAI source code as part of this case. So on the whole, it doesn't seem to have gone very well for X or XAI. Given that they're investing in each other now, I don't even know where the line is between those companies. And finally, something I don't often get to say about France, where app tracking transparency is under attack because it's anti-competitive to stop French companies spying on French citizens. Never did understand that. Anyway, a French court has blocked an attempt by an advertising group to block app tracking transparency. So app tracking transparency lives on in France. Thank bloody well goodness. HR and acquisition news then, and put a pin in this for a moment. But hey, there's actually some acquisition news. So we have a one-in, one-out sort of a situation. Apple has lost the Safari developer Marco Triviero to the browser company, and meanwhile Apple have gained what I think is a rather dramatic gain, one of the co-founders of the fantastic Halide Pro camera app is now an Apple employee. And as someone who has a lot of admiration for Halide, it's such a great app, I'm very happy to see that kind of talent coming into Apple. I think Safari is mature enough to, you know, to do without a designer. The browser company might do something interesting. I'm highly skeptical of their work so far, but it has the potential to be interesting. So yay, I guess. Meanwhile, something I haven't really talked about because it's utterly rumour and speculation is this notion that Tim Cook is about to retire and that Apple are busy figuring out his successor. And the chances are there is some fire behind the obvious smoke, but the chances are it's not nearly as dramatic as people would like it to be, because every board of directors has a fiduciary duty, frankly, to prepare for the unexpected. They need to have an idea of who they would pop in to replace the CEO if Tim Cook stepped out in front of the wrong bus one morning. Like, that's just responsible running of a company. So the board absolutely should be doing that. There is also the obvious reality that, again, the board have a legal duty to anticipate and prepare for Tim Cook is at an age when it is not a question of if he will retire in the next few years, but exactly when he will retire in the next few years. And so they could wait around and do no preparation until he hands in his notice, as it were, and then scramble like idiots, or they could do their homework. So I think it is both true that the board are working on succession and that Tim Cook isn't going anywhere in the near future. We shall see if I'm correct about that second assumption, but the first assumption I'm pretty darn confident of. Anyway, a name that keeps coming up in all of this smoke around the obvious, well, of course, the board are preparing, is John Turnus, who is one of the younger senior Apple executives. He's the senior Apple executive who has been running what I would argue is the single most successful part of Apple and has been doing so without drama. John Turnus is in charge of hardware, and Apple's delivery on hardware has been amazing in the last 5 years. Since the Butterfly keyboard, I don't think they've put a toe wrong in their hardware, and the transition to the M series, to Apple Silicon, has been astonishingly good. Apple's hardware is superb. The phones, the iPads, the Macs, the Apple Watches. Apple are making really good hardware. And John Turnus runs that, and he doesn't cause a lot of drama. He tends not to show up in these show notes for the very simple reason that he's doing a good job. And he's a decade younger than the other big names you would expect to be in the mix, who are all approximately the same age as Tim Cook. So they're the kind of people who the board should be considering for an interim CEO should the unexpected happen. And John Turnus is the kind of person the board should be considering for a real replacement, assuming everything goes to plan and Tim Cook retires when he wants to, not when something ick happens. Anyway, all of that is to say that we have some unconfirmed reporting from leaker extraordinaire Mark Gurman, who says that while on paper, the design department still reports directly to Tim Cook, Tim Cook has delegated that reporting to John Turnus. So as the CEO, Tim Cook can delegate his direct reports to other senior vice presidents, and John Turnus is one of those. So apparently, the org chart hasn't been updated to reflect this, but Tim has delegated that design work to John, which is the kind of thing you would do if you were trying to groom up your heir. Make sure that John Turnus's experiences are as rounded as possible. Also, Tim Cook doesn't have a great eye for design, so I kind of like the idea that he's delegating this one out. As I say, unconfirmed report, Mark Gurman is usually accurate, so I don't feel uncomfortable talking about this rumour. But, interesting. Very interesting. And then finally, an actual acquisition that we actually know about. Now, Apple haven't told us how much they paid, but Reuters was first to have that Apple have acquired the Israeli audio AI startup Q.ai, and I'll just quote Reuters quickly. Apple did not say how it will use Q.ai's technology, editorial here by me, they never do, but said that the startup has worked on new applications of machine learning to help devices understand whispered speech and to enhance audio in challenging environments. To be honest, when you make phones and watches and other things that tend to be with people in noisy environments, that sounds like a good fit technologically for Apple. So I am sure the talented people and or the technology they have developed will be very useful to Apple going forward. As I hinted in the opening, we have quite a bit in the Apple services and original content highlights. The year started quite early on with Apple taking the opportunity to brag about how well their services are doing. So we have a press release from Apple headlined 2025 marked a record-breaking year for Apple services. There was quite a detailed press release with an interesting mix, actually, of John Gruber calls Bezos numbers and real numbers. A Bezos number is basically a number that isn't really a number. It looks like one, but it isn't. Like, we doubled sales, or we had the highest ever sales. Well, if you're doubling from 2 to 4, you've doubled sales. If you're doubling from 2 million units to 4 million units, you've also doubled sales. There's quite a big difference in those two doublings. Phone with numbers, without numbers. So I will pick out the highlights, or I will read you the highlights as picked out by Apple Insider instead. So Apple Pay is now available in 89 markets, and that sort of tracks with the fact that I have for many months been regularly reporting on, and Apple Pay comes here, and Apple Pay comes here, and Apple Pay comes here. So almost 90 countries, that makes sense to me. Find My has launched in South Korea. Well, okay, that was a strange one where South Korea had basically held that up, which has been very annoying for South Koreans. Apple Fitness has gone to 28 more countries and regions. That's not nothing. The App Store saw 850 million average weekly users. That's also not nothing. Apple Pay eliminated $1 billion in fraud. Well, good, good. Apple Pay saw over 100 billion in merchant sales. Impressive. Apple TV, quote, eclipsed all prior viewership records in December 2025. That is a Bezos number. And then finally, another Bezos number, Apple Music reached, quote, all-time highs. Okay then, great. How high? Not a clue. Or rather, we know exactly how high, we're not telling you. So yeah, Apple started off taking a little bit of a celebratory lap for how well 2025 went. The next thing we learned then was that Apple confirmed that they have found a new owner for the Apple credit card, which is only available in the United States, much to my annoyance. I would quite like to have it available here too, but it is not to be. And JP Morgan Chase have reportedly been quite cranky about it for some time. It hasn't worked out great for them. JP Morgan Chase weren't really experienced in consumer credit cards. They went in with Apple assuming it would be some sort of magic cash cow for them, and it turns out they're just not very good at consumer credit cards. It hasn't been the cash cow they hoped, and they've been pretty vocal about wanting an out ahead of their contract ending for some time. Well, we now know officially that they have succeeded in getting out. So it is now going to Chase. It's going to take 24 months to transition. And to be honest, from a user's point of view, I don't think very much is going to change. And just an interesting sort of aside note that this is a very substantial business, because we also have a headline that JP Morgan took a profit hit to set aside money to run Apple Card, because you need to have money in reserve to run a massive credit operation like this. So it's not a sign that the card is in some way not profitable or in some way a troubled asset. It's a sign that, yeah, you can't be a small bank and run Apple Card. And it's a substantial investment. So JP Morgan Chase are putting in place the infrastructure to do this. And it's a 24-month transition period. So this is not a whim. This is a serious takeover. There was also, I noticed anyway, that January seemed to have a new push on Vision Pro immersive content. So we have immersive basketball games coming to the Vision Pro starting on January 9th. The first game is now available via the NBA app rather than via Apple's own apps. So if you're into basketball and you have a Vision Pro, I guess that's a small enough set of people. But anyway, it sounds like a fun way to watch a basketball game to me, who doesn't watch sport. But anyway, what do I know? Still sounds interesting. What might also be interesting to some is Apple Vision Pro is going to stream Crufts in a new immersive video series called Top Dogs. Okay. I think I'm even less interested in dog shows than in sports. But it is kind of an interesting idea to be able to have a 3D look at the very overbred dogs. So anyway, interesting. And what definitely does sound more interesting to even cranky old me is Apple Arcade is getting the nostalgic Retrocade, which is basically a Vision Pro immersive experience where you are in an arcade where you can wander around and go to different cabinets and play vintage games. That genuinely does sound like the kind of thing I would do if I was even able to buy a Vision Pro in this country, which I am not, because Apple still haven't released it here. Right, okay, so, a notable, a lot of Vision Pro stuff, I think. Shazam has revealed its Fast Forward 2026 Artist to Watch feature. I just thought this was interesting because Shazam see what people are Shazamming, so they get an idea of what's just becoming popular. So I think if you're into music, that's an interesting one to have a look at. And obviously, given the Shazam is part of Apple, you're going to get links to their Apple Music profile. So, you know, I think it's an interesting way for Apple to encourage music under the Apple Music brand. Apple Arcade is adding four new games in February, including Civilization VII, which is a big name. Apple PR was big to brag about it, but Apple Insider warned that there are big caveats. Basically, it won't receive the downloadable content released for other platforms. What you get is what you get. And then really, the biggest story is how well Apple TV is doing at the various content industry awards. So let's start with the more concrete stuff. Some of the earlier nominations we would have talked about late last, or we may or may not have talked about. I tend not to report every nomination because it will be a lot. But there were nominations and they have become actual awards. So Apple has had its best ever annual Critics' Choice Award, winning a total of 7 awards for 3 TV series. That would be The Studio, Pluribus and Severus, and F1, the movie. The Studio and Pluribus win at the Golden Globe Awards then. So that was 3 awards from 14 nominations. A little bit of a snub here for F1, the movie. No awards. That will not have made Apple happy. And given the Golden Globes are often seen as a preview of the Oscars, that may make Apple particularly not happy. However, put a pin in that for a second, because there were plenty more nominations. Like I say, I don't like to do these nominations every single time, but you know something? It's actually noteworthy that there are a lot of them. So Apple has corralled 12 nominations for the 32nd Actors Award led by the studio. Apple secures 7 nominations for the 37th Producers Guild Awards, 6 nominations in the American Cinema Editors Award. That would be for F1, the movie, Severance, Pluribus and Mr. Scorsese. F1, the movie and The Last Bus are nominated for BAFTAs. That would be the British Academy Film and Television Awards. And Pluribus leads Apple TV Writers Guild Awards with 4 of 9 nominations. That's 9 nominations for Apple. So basically 4 of the 9 Apple got are for Pluribus. Not that Apple got 4 of 9 total nominations for the whole ceremony. That would be weird. Apple then also got nominations for The Studio and Severance. And Apple scores 6 Academy Award nominations, including Best Picture, which everyone thinks is a joke, for F1, and Best Documentary Feature as well for F1. So, you know, might come to something. In very much related news, F1 the movie is officially the most watched film in Apple TV history. Again, a Bezos number, or as Ken Ray would put it, fun with numbers without numbers. And also in related news, Apple TV revs up Formula One content ahead of racing season. That is to say, they've added a new collection to Apple TV called Get Ready for Formula One, which is just little video clips to do with Formula One, and there are 10 of them at launch. We have 4 main stories, and one of them is a little bit unusual. I have sort of decided that now that this is a solo show, it's okay for me to do some editorializing from time to time, and I'm just going to put a giant big flag on it. The first main story is 99.9% editorial. It is my critique, and I'll just tell you now, if you don't want to hear people say mean things about Apple, skip to story 2. You know, normal service resumes from story 2, 3, and 4. But story 1 is me being a little bit critical of Apple, and specifically Apple's chief CEO. Yeah. So anyway, that's main story number 1 is an editorial of me critiquing Apple's response to recent events. And by response, I mean failure to respond, really. But then we move on to regular stories. So we have the launch of the new Creator Studio subscription bundle. We have the rather important, I think, partnership with Google for AI through Gemini. And then, of course, we have the Q1 2026 earnings call, which ties a lot of these themes together. Starting with me editorializing, and I'm just going to read what I wrote in the show notes. Apple's cowardice in the face of the Trump administration was on full display in January. They are, of course, not alone. I should point out that Apple are not in any way standing out in terms of corporate America. And that's kind of at the heart of my critique. I think all of corporate America is letting itself down. And Apple is one of the herd. So I think the first story that the first one that really got me cranky was Apple made a mockery of their own trumpeting of the App Store, and they've undermined their own defense in all of the different countries all over the world where their App Store is being challenged as anti-competitive, because Apple's whole point is that, yes, it is anti-competitive, or, well, they won't use the word anti-competitive. Yes, it is a walled garden, but those walls provide protection. It is about protecting our users. It is providing a safe space for our users. If Apple was both serious about that and had a spine, then when a major app started to offer as a feature non-consensual nudity, including of children, that is child abuse material and harassment material, that is not in keeping with Apple's App Store guidelines. I am, of course, talking about X's a Grok chatbot having no problem whatsoever undressing random people without their permission and posting it on a public feed. It's not just me who noticed the rank hypocrisy here. Apple also got a letter from US senators, to which I have not yet seen a response, where the senators point out, your App Store has rules. You throw them in our face all the time. How about you apply them? Okay, I'm obviously strongly paraphrasing the letter here, but that's basically what it boils down to. You keep telling us how amazing these App Store rules are. Here is an opportunity for you to prove the value of this App Store by actually applying your rules to actually protect your users. Oh, look, you're not. So Apple happily ignored the whole problem, while Elon first attempted to blame the users. Then they decided, that isn't going to fly. Let's make it a premium feature. Let's charge people for the right to make abusive and non-consensual nudity. Child abuse and non-consensual nudity. That's a feature, right? That the only thing I could put in the show notes on that was just the head explode emoji. What? You're going to charge people to do this obscene stuff? That's your answer? That didn't stand that long. Did it last a few days? So then X decided that actually what we'll do is we'll geo-block for every country that has laws against this kind of thing. Now that is a lot more effective because that's most of them. But hang on a second, it actually takes more effort to do that kind of selective geo-blocking than just to get rid of the bloody feature for the planet, you know, for everyone's sake, for the goodness of humanity, for doing the right thing. Yeah, anyway, that's beyond the ken of Elon Musk at the moment. His brain is sufficiently addled that, or he is sufficiently out of touch with reality for one reason or another, that he doesn't think like that anymore. Unsurprisingly, the European Union has launched a formal investigation of X under the Digital Services Act, because one of the things the Digital Services Act does is give large online platforms a duty of care towards their users. And this kind of harassment and child abuse imagery, strangely enough, is not considered to be okay when you have a duty of care. So I imagine, obviously, they have to go through the formalities, but I think there's a pretty open and shut case. I am by no means alone in this critique. I am not out on any kind of ledge. And interesting that Apple Insider have found that it's not just X.ai that's getting away with dodgy stuff on the App Store. I'll read their headline. Moral low ground. App Store is rife with AI nudify apps. So Apple make a lot of services revenue and they could police the App Store better, but they're not bothering to, but every app has to be proactively approved. So you what now? Yeah, I don't understand how this is happening. But again, remember, folks, the reason it's okay for Apple to have this closed walled garden, which definitely does have an effect on the competition landscape, is because the App Store is protecting users. Just remember that. And then finally, I'm going to outsource my opinion. Well, no, I'm going to outsource more opinion to Dan Moran on Six Colours, because frankly, I think Dan Moran said it very well. He put the word coward into my head, and he's absolutely right, obviously. I've just editorialised for the last God knows how many minutes. So Dan Moran's headline is, Apple cowardly still has not pulled X and Grok from the App Store. He probably says it more eloquently than I did. And since he's typing rather than talking into a microphone, perhaps a little bit less animated. Yes, I'm cranky about this. Have you noticed? Okay, so that's the first piece of important news. I don't think Apple responded to particularly well. And then the second thing is that on the night when a nurse was gunned down by federal officers in Minnesota, Tim Cook decided that was the right time to go to a screening in the White House of a fluff documentary about the president's wife, or the first lady, to give her her due. And as not even the first protester killed in Minneapolis, that will be the second. And after literally days of absolute silence, Tim Cook responded with an internal memo that was weaker than weak sauce. It used weasel words to talk about events and finding compromise and basically an amount of words were expressed. No actual content was found within them. It was weak. It was just weak. I cannot express just how pathetic that response is nearly as well as John Gruber can. So I'm going to outsource and say that there are links in the show notes at lesjasok.ie to two pieces by John Gruber. The first is just his initial response, which just has select quotes of other people's analysis of the memo and a few choice words from John. And it's not a bad first, in fact, it's a very good first take. That's why I'm linking to it. But that set his mind off. And he then produced, a few days later, a deeper post. It's a much more thoughtful post. I think it's a pretty good sort of analysis of where we stand at the moment. Politics and the English Language, January 2026 edition. I would highly recommend having a read. So yeah, on the whole, my critique of Tim Cook increases as Trump 2 continues. Okay, I'm now uneditorializing. I'm now taking myself off my editorial pedestal and returning to business as usual. Our second main story then is Apple's release of Apple Creator Studio, which is an app suite or a subscription bundle which collects together Apple's professional creative apps and a weirdo at the end. So what do you get for this bundle? You get Final Cut Pro for the Mac and iPad. You get Logic Pro for the Mac and iPad. You get Pixelmator Pro for the Mac and iPad. So you have video editing, music creation, photo editing, graphic design covered. And these are all, so far, everything I've said is Mac and iPad. Then we have Motion for the Mac, which gives you the ability to create your custom video effects. We have Compressor for Mac, which is for fancy pants encoding to turn your videos into appropriately sized files for everything you want to do with them. You have Mainstage for Mac, which is a music performance app that I don't understand because it's absolutely not what I do. And then we have the weirdo, Advanced Features in the iWork Suite, which is some content libraries which look potentially useful, and some advanced AI features which may or may not be useful. So what do you pay for this? Well, the regular pricing is $12.99 a month, or $129 to be specific, dollars per year. That comes with a month's free trial and family sharing. So that's not actually bad at all. That's a lot of pro apps there for a reasonable fee. If you're a creator who makes a living publishing content, then $13 a month or $130 a year for a really quite complete suite of really quite powerful tools, that's a good deal. That is extremely good. There is also an education tier available. Same products, If you're a student or a teacher, then you can apply for the education pricing, and that is $2.99 a month, so $3 a month, or $29.99 a year, or $30 a year. That is very good pricing for students and teachers. There is also a 3-month free trial with every new Mac and iPad purchase, and that's kind of interesting because at the moment, I don't think people get as exposed to Apple's Pro Tools as they could, so this is an interesting freebie to throw in. And the existing standalone versions will remain available. I'm very carefully saying the word existing standalone versions here because there was another little bit of news hiding in there. So we've already had Final Cut Pro for the Mac and the iPad for plenty of time and Logic Pro for the Mac and the iPad for plenty of time. What we haven't had for the iPad is Pixelmator Pro. So there is a somewhat, I would almost say, abandonware app, Pixelmator, for the iPad. It's long in the tooth, missing many of the features of Pixelmator Pro. It's basically languishing, the nicest thing you could say. And so it's now official that that app is not going to get any more updates. It is effectively being wound down. But Pixelmator Pro is coming to the iPad. And as I write this, I believe it's only going to be available through the bundle. But I'm not 100% sure of that, so we shall see. But that is an interesting development. The iWork Suite then is the obvious, huh? Now, I would potentially be interested in the iWork Suite, but I would want it as part of my iCloud bundle. I don't want, well, I already own the full Final Cut Pro. I don't need Logic. I already own Pixelmator Pro. I don't need Motion, though I think I own that because I own Final Cut. I don't need Compressor, though I think I own that because I own Final Cut. I don't even understand what MainStage does, so I definitely don't need that. Why is there an Office Suite thrown in here with these creative tools? It's a really odd fit. So I hope that this is just Apple dipping their toe and there's going to be like a Home Office Suite or something, or some way for regular folk who have no need of Final Cut Logic or Pixelmator or Motion or Compressor or MainStage to get these advanced iWork Suites, because there's a lot of people who would want better presentations who have absolutely no interest in editing a movie. So at the moment, this is weird. We shall see where it develops. What's also a little bit weird is that the iWork update, so basically the old iWork apps are being sort of kind of abandoned. Because of the vagaries of how the App Store works, they're being actually abandoned. So there is an update in the App Store for your existing iWork apps. So when you run those apps, you'll get a little pop-up saying, you need to upgrade to the new version. And you're like, but I just did upgrade. But it's like, no, because they've now added a new app to the App Store, and it's a unified app between the iPad and the Mac. So it is a different SKU in the App Store. And it has different icons, different not good icons. It's basically the identical app to the one you get as part of the Creator Studio subscription, only with the bonus new features disabled, with a nag screen whenever you accidentally click on one of them. It does have liquid glass, so it is a refreshed version of the suite, and everyone gets their existing features for free but refreshed, and then the advanced features are bundled in. And like I say, the bundling of iWork into the Creator Suite is weird. So again, this is probably step one of N, and I don't know how many N is, but here we are. A lot to analyse here. Links in the show notes, letustalk.ie, to a full list of the advanced features in Keynote Pages and Numbers. A really good overview from Ars Technica about everything in this new Creator Studio. So 7 things to know about how Apple's Creator Studio subscriptions work. And then a very nice breakdown also linked from Apple Insider, which basically says if you're a person who already owns the standalone apps, if you're a person who owns some of the standalone, basically all the different possible permutations of who you could be looking at this new thing and deciding if it's for you, they break them down into headings and then basically discuss the pros and cons of staying where you are or upgrading. So I think it's a useful bit of analysis there from Apple Insider. And if you're trying to understand more about the weirdness, 6 Colors have a good article. Apple Creator Studio has a rough App Store rollout, and it really is down to just the fact that the App Store is rather inflexible, and now it's Apple's turn to feel the pain instead of random third-party developers. And then very much as part of the rollout here, we have Apple Kills free 90-day Final Cut Pro and Logic Pro trial. Yeah, they want you on the new subscription service. The Pro apps for education are gone. You now get them through the Creator Studio in subscription instead if you're in education. Apple, pretty much the day after they announced the Content Studio, they had they announced a 3-day Creator Studio event for creators. And they also then, just a few days ago, released a video on their PR site behind Kylie Hanagami's viral dance creations edited with Final Cut Pro, which is obviously, again, about advertising this new bundle. So, I'm not against subscription software, especially for people who use software to make a living. If you use software to make income, then you are going to have to pay licenses for that software. And you can either do it the old-fashioned way, where you would have a gigantic bill to Adobe every few years, which scares the pants off you, or a predictable, a large bill every few years that doesn't quite come when you expect it and you're never quite sure how much it will be, versus a monthly small dollar amount that you can budget for with great ease. So everything that Bartificer Creations does, as much as possible of what Bartificer Creation uses software-wise is subscription-based or simply not very expensive. Because I'm trying to run this podcast on a break-even basis, and it's very hard to do that when some years you get a giant big bill for many, many, many hundreds of euro and some years you don't. Whereas it's a lot easier to deal with, you know, $10, $20, $30 a month of subscriptions that you just know this is what I'm going to be paying every single month. I have money coming in through the Patreon. Thank you very much, supporters. I have money going out to various bills. Balance the two out all as well, etc. It's just much easier to budget as a professional creative. And I'm not even a professional creative. I'm a pseudo-professional creative, as in it's run as a business to protect me, the individual, from any potential fallout from being on the internet in 2026, but in an attempt to break even. So I have the same concerns as someone doing it professionally, but I actually don't need to make money to put food on the table. I just need the podcast to break even-ish. Okay, sorry, I went a little off track there, but basically I can see the value of this for creatives. And the name is perfect. Creator Studio. Yup, that is who it's for. Our third main story, then, is one that we sort of expected and sort of didn't. It is official. Google were actually the first to announce that it was official, but Apple are going to pay Google to use Gemini technology to power the new advanced Siri. Now, everyone immediately assumed, wrongly, that because Gemini, the product users see, is a chatbot, that would mean that Siri would just become Gemini. But that's not how AI works, and that's also because AI branding is a mess. So an actual AI product is two things, which are often branded under one name. There's a back-end model, which is then used to power some sort of product that does some sort of thing. And with Gemini the chatbot, you have Gemini the model and Gemini the chat interface, both branded as Gemini, but they're completely different, unrelated things. And what Apple are doing is they are paying Google for the model and only the model, and they are running that model not in Google's cloud, but on their own private cloud compute. And they're using that model not to power Google's chatbot, but to power their Siri. So from the end user point of view, Gemini is going to be approximately as visible as Akamai delivering movies for Apple TV or Amazon's AWS powering the servers running Apple's mail servers. In other words, utterly, totally, and completely invisible. Because the user interface is Siri, that's remaining with Apple. All of the privacy guarantees Apple have built into Siri remain completely in place, and Apple have confirmed that, as indeed have Google. So yes, Google is a company who make a lot of money selling ads. Yes, Google is a data hoover company. Yes, Google has entered into arrangement with Apple. But no, that does not mean that Apple have sold out our privacy to Google. Absolutely, categorically not what's going on here. So I just think this is, like, they needed a good model. Basically, Siri didn't need an interface transplant. It needed a brain transplant. and Apple have gone out and procured what is, as best as I can tell, really quite a good brain, which is Gemini. Now, they didn't actually buy what I think most people think is probably the best brain, which is Claude from Anthropic. And that brings us up to another unofficial rumoury reporty thing, which I'm always a little reluctant to talk about. But again, it's Mark Gurman. And again, Mark Gurman has a track record of being accurate. Therefore, it's worth listening to Mark Gurman. He has the story basically saying that Apple already and continue to make very heavy use of Claude from Anthropic internally within the company, to power their own internal process and actually run custom versions of the Claude model on Apple hardware to power Apple back-end processes. And they would have liked to build Siri off Anthropic's models as well, since they're already familiar with them, but apparently Anthropic got greedy and demanded more than Apple is willing to pay, so Apple went, no, we really are serious, we absolutely can do without you, and they went to Google instead, according to unconfirmed reporting from Mark Gurman. So, interesting little side note there. Finally then, our fourth main story is Apple's Q1 2026 earnings. As per usual, we have amazing charts from Jason Snell, which help you put the numbers into context. I'll go through those, some of those shortly. We also, from Six Colors, have the fantastic This Is Tim transcript of Apple's Q1 financial call. Always useful to have a read over stuff, get the exact quotes if you want. I have a link in the show notes at les-talk.ie to the Mac Observer's analysis, because really I thought their summary of the financials was the best. And their headline sort of says a lot. Apple Q1 earnings report released, $143.8 billion in revenue and $2.84 earnings per share. That's up, let's just say. Another interesting one from the Mac Observer is they take a moment to pull out the bits of the earnings that Apple's CFO and CEO have chosen to highlight in their various press appearances. I think that's interesting to see what Apple want you to look at. As is always the case on these earnings calls, it's not only the numbers. So yes, Apple released the numbers as a press release. And yes, there's an earnings call where they talk to analysts. And in that earnings call, they talk about more than the numbers. And so three sort of interesting points stood out there for me. So memory cost explosion won't hurt Apple too badly in Q2, but might sting in Q3. In other words, we're okay for now, but we're not going to tell you we're okay for the rest of the year. Apple were quite pleased to brag on the call that they had reached 2.5 billion active devices. That is a lot. And Apple were also very happy to point out that the AirPods Pro 3 is doing really quite well. So well, in fact, that they literally can't make them quickly enough. And that had they been able to make as many AirPods Pro 3 as people would like to buy, then their wearables would not have shrunk this year like it has done for years and years and years and years and years now. Put a pin in that for a moment. Again, actually, no, before we look into the other people's analysis, let's have a quick run through of the charts over on Six Colors. There is a video where Jason Snell and Dan Moran discuss the earnings if you want even more detail. But it's always fun to have a look at the pictures because they just say so much more than the words do. And so this is a record-breaking quarter in terms of revenue. So revenue is very bursty. The holiday quarter is always the biggest. So if you look at the graph of quarters, it's three small and a big, three small and a big, three small and a big, three small and a big. And that's exactly what we had here, three small and a big. But this big is bigger than any other big that's ever been before by really quite a bit. So 143.8 billion revenue. The biggest previous big was 124.3 a year ago. So A, last year's Q1 was record-breaking, and B, this year's Q1 has beaten that Q1 by a really quite substantial amount. That is impressive. If you break it down by category, for a long time, the pie chart was basically iPhone for half the chart, and then the other stuff making up the other half of the chart. Well, the iPhone is now 59% of the chart now. That may be slightly distorted by it being the holiday quarter and iPhones being very popular gifts, so that may go back to being more 50-50 in the next quarter, but it's interesting that we're now starting to look more like a Pac-Man than half a pie. Mac revenue then less good. Now, on the whole, Mac revenue is much less bursty than iPhone revenue, because while there are people who buy each other's MacBook Pros for Christmas, there are a lot more people who buy each other iPhones for Christmas. So it's a lot less dramatic. You can't really pick out the Q1s nearly as easily in the data as you can for the iPhone. So the Mac revenue, when you look at the graph zoomed out, it's actually fine. The Mac isn't doing badly. It's just a slight dip quarter to quarter and a bigger dip year to year. But when you look at the bigger graph, it's not a bigger dip year to year because something's gone terribly, horribly wrong. It's a bigger dip year to year because 1 year ago was an abnormally good quarter. So Apple is actually doing, the Mac is doing fine, is the bottom line. Even though on paper, not so good, 7% drop in revenue, it's doing just fine when you look at the zoomed out view. iPad is doing genuinely good. The iPad numbers are bursty in the same way the iPhone numbers are, just not as extreme. And it's not their best ever quarter for the iPad in terms of revenue, but at 8.6 billion, yeah, billion, my God, that's not bad. And it's up substantially over the previous three quarters and up substantially over the year-ago quarter. So, you know, 6% revenue change year-on-year, not bad at all. iPhone revenue then, highest ever, really quite strongly highest ever. 85.3 billion. This time last year was 69.1 billion. A year before that was 69.7 billion. A year before that was 71 billion, which I think is the best ever. 2 years before that was 71 billion, which I think is the best ever. Certainly the best as far as the six colors charts go, but 85.3 billion is shockingly good. When you see it on a graph, it's like, oh, look, this tower is taller than all the other towers in the graph. Dramatically so. The conclusion everyone is drawing, and I think very rightly so, is that the iPhone 17 is a darn good iPhone. In fact, the entire family of iPhones 17 are darn good, and maybe that iPhone Air isn't doing too bad in China. More on that in a moment. So yeah, 23% revenue growth in the iPhone, the most popular product in the world, has gotten 23% better. That's astounding. Services is the only straight line graph in the entire earnings report. It's not cyclical in any way, shape or form. It's just no spikiness. It's just slowly, steadily up and to the right. Slowly, steadily up and to the right. So from 28.8 previous quarter to 30 this quarter. A year ago was 26.3. Yeah, that's just how it is. So, yeah. Year-over-year service revenue change up 14%. But if you look at the revenue change, all the other revenue change graphs are some up, some down. The services is just up a lot, up a little, up a decent amount. But they're all up. Gross margins are astonishing. 48.2%. Almost half of everything Apple take in is profit. And they make physical stuff. That is very rare. Wearables, home and accessories, slightly down from last quarter. Like I say, Apple say that if they'd been able to sell all the AirPods Pro 3 that people want, then that wouldn't have been true. It's down 2%. If you look at the long-term graph of hardware, of wearables, so basically wearables, home and accessories is all lumped into one category, not doing great. Like it's been falling for years now. Falling by only 2% seems like a win. Well, the rumors are there's a lot of home stuff coming this year, so that might help. Total profit then, best year as far as the charts go back, at $42.1 billion of profit. Again, amazing 16% growth in revenue change overall year on year. Astonishing. Regional then, the Americas and Europe are slowly, steadily up and to the right. Asia Pacific and Japan, slowly up and to the right, nothing dramatic. And then there's China, which has a very sharp kick up for this quarter. Something has gone very well in China. That is a 38% rise year over year. That is a lot. Clearly, the iPhones 17 are a hit. But I think this is also evidence that the iPhone Air, while it's not a hit in the Western world, is a hit in China, or is certainly doing them no harm. And I've heard a lot of reports from analysts that it's actually quite a popular phone over there. So whatever Apple are doing, it's working. for the Chinese market. It's very clearly working. I think Apple understand China better than a lot of analysts understand Apple. So anyway, that's my quick tour of the numbers. Thank you to Jason Snell for the amazing diagrams over at Six Colors. Analysis from other people then. Apple Insider sum up sort of the big picture financials. Apple blows away Wall Street expectations with record quarter. Apple resurgent in China with unexpected iPhone 17 sales domination, also from Apple Insider. Actually, a third one also from Apple Insider. Amid record revenue, Apple's Q1 2026 R&D spend reveals its AI ambitions. That's a little nugget there. So hidden deep in the numbers is the R&D spend, and that's actually kicking up a bit, which makes it very clear that Apple R&D digging into this AI thing that they've been promising us for this spring. So, nice little spot there by Apple Insider. And then, just one final related story. Apple reveals Tim Cook's 2025 earnings in new proxy filing. Like I say, at a moral level, I have some strong critique on Tim Cook's running of things. See editorial main story number one. But if I were an Apple investor, I would certainly not be calling for Tim Cook to resign, because those are darn good earnings. And as such, I probably, as an investor, wouldn't be cranky to hear that Tim Cook is being well rewarded for doing so well with the company. Fiscally speaking, his total compensation package is a shocking $74 million. Which is extra, it kind of gives you an idea of how weird CEO pay is, because $74 million is the total benefit he got from his package, but his actual base salary was quote-unquote only $3 million. Now, Steve Jobs used to take a $1 salary, and he used to also make many millions, not $74 million, mind you. So yeah, Tim Cook has paid 3 million times more than Apple in terms of base salary, but his take-home probably isn't that much more than, well, it's probably only 10 times more. Anyway. Yeah, so there we are. Wrapping up then, as usual, with a few other smaller stories that made the news in January. We got new AirTags. They are not particularly exciting. They are the identical form factor. They're just a little bit better in every way. More connectivity, improved findability, assuming you have a new enough iPhone to make use of it, louder speaker, everything the old AirTag did and does, and did and does very well. The new one does a little bit better, prices are about the same, and a teardown has revealed that they're more difficult to tamper with, so that Apple are continuing to add ever more protections to avoid, to mitigate abuse of these devices, which is no bad thing at all. So on the whole, nice little unexciting but useful upgrade. I'm not replacing any of my AirTags proactively, but the next time I have something new that needs tracking, or the next time I manage to somehow lose or break one, I will be happy to buy one of these new ones and get a mildly better AirTag. Yay. I was a little worried that maybe Apple would stop doing this kind of thing, so my critique of Tim Cook would have been even worse had this new story not happened. Apple unveils a new black Unity Apple Watch band, and it's so pretty, I'm tempted to buy another Solo Loop, even though I absolutely hated the form factor of the Solo Loop last time I bought a Solo Loop, but it's so pretty, I'm tempted to buy one anyway. Oh, I'm very torn. Yeah, very nice looking Apple Unity band. Apple Watch hypertension alerts have rolled out in 7 more countries. That would be Australia, Brazil, Colombia, Indonesia, Malaysia, South Korea, and Turkey, or Turkia, as I think we're supposed to call it these days. Back to uni appears to happen in different, given that these are all Southern Hemisphere countries, maybe I should not be even slightly surprised that there are places that go back to university in January rather than September. There are back to uni deals available in 4 countries, Australia, New Zealand, Brazil, and South Korea. And finally, put a pin in the date, Apple's annual shareholder meeting will be held on the 24th of February. That brings a surprisingly busy January of Apple news to an end. I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you tolerated my rare editorial as opposed to main story. And I want to say a big thank you to everyone who supports the show. You will, of course, find detailed show notes at letstalk.ie. And I'm extra fond of saying letstalk.ie because my mission for January was to get the revamped letstalk.ie up and running, and I have succeeded. I put the new site live on Wednesday. There are basically the old content needs to be manually migrated, so the actual words of the old episodes are all there, but the formatting's a bit of a mess because that's what happens when you import from WordPress into not WordPress. I could go into technical detail, but I won't. The bottom line is the site as a whole has a whole new architecture. It is much easier for me to run and to maintain. I think it is a much better data architecture overall. And when I find the time to go back and backport all the old episodes, it will be even nicer. I'm going to prioritize backporting Let's Talk Photography because those episodes are way more evergreen than the Let's Talk Apple ones. But as it is, everything works fine because the content is all there. I think it looks much better. I wouldn't mind a little pat on the head on social media to tell me so. But anyway, letstalk.ie, you will still find links to support the show, although they're not under the same big blue banners they used to be under. If you would like to give an ongoing regular contribution to help me offset the bills and keep this place ticking over at approximately break even, then you will find the link to Patreon. You will also find a link to PayPal, which is fantastic for making one-off donations, which help me to buy new hardware and or software as needed, and to top up the Patreon as needed. And you will also find a list of affiliate links, which if they happen to be for things you happen to want, then you using those links will send a little bit of a thank you my way. They are all products that I use myself, and therefore they're products that, well, in fact, I don't just use them myself. They're products that power things you see on the Let's Talk banner. So if you think things are working well, then those are the companies responsible for those things working well. I have been your host, Bart Bouchot. You can find me at bartb.ie. And until next month, happy computing. Thank you.